So, what do I really have to kasher? So, just a few things. Some of these we've heard before. Hopefully, every year I go through it to come up with one or two new things that I didn't notice before. And we'll see how we do. So, the first thing is, we've pointed out a few times in different contexts, is the source for kashering, the source for everything that we do about kashering. So it says that comes from the story of Midian, the story of Bnei Yisrael attacking Midian. They got all of their things, and what are we going to do with all their things? Are we allowed to eat all their things? So the pasuk tells us, "Vayomer Elazar hakohen el anshei hatzavah ha-be'im l'milchama." Elazar said to the people that came from war, "Zos chukas haTorah shetzivah Hashem es Moshe." This is one of the chukim. This is one of the commandments that Hashem gave. Achas hazahav yes hakesef yes hanachoshes yes habarzel yes habedim. Right, the gold, the silver, the copper, the bronze, the deal in aferis are anybody?
Tin and lead.
Excellent. Okay, all metals. So cold over shiyavo beish tavir beish. Everything that was in contact with fire has to be put back in fire. Fitaher ach b'mei nidai yischata. But also has to be sent to the mikvah. That's probably what it means. Not everybody agrees what that means, but okay. V'chol ashelo yavo beish tavir b'mayim. And whatever wasn't passed in front of fire, it has to go in front of water. Right, so those are the two primary ways that we kasher things, right? We kasher them either by having them come in touch with fire, although we don't really do too much of that, right? But or you kasher it, you put it in water, you dump it into a boiling pot of water. So those are the two possibilities of kashering. Now, the thing I point out, although it's all a full disclosure, is I haven't yet really seen anybody else make a big point of this, is the idea of zos chukas haTorah, that this is actually given the rule of chuk. This is, just as paraduma is known as zos chukas haTorah, and we all just point out how that means we don't really understand the reason for it, and it doesn't really make logical sense. The same terminology is used here, zos chukas haTorah. This is the chok of the Torah. So although we want to sit and we make a logical sense out of it, and we make physics out of it, and we start talking about how taste enters and taste exits, and some things open and some things close, and there's spitters and there's suckers, and there's all these different things that we discuss in the role of kashrus, right, of how tastes transfer in and out of pots and in and out of all these other types of utensils. All of that is good in order to make a cohesive understanding of what the laws are, but it's important for the cynics of the world to realize, so is chukas haTorah, to realize that this is still, that it's a chok, that doesn't have to make sense, and doesn't have to make physical, not physical sense, it doesn't have to fit into our physical understanding of the thing.
I was a young chap living in Nuremberg, and I had to make Pesach, and I wanted new utensils, and I didn't want the kasher. So I made the mistake of speaking to a colonel who was Irish, and I told him the halacha of masher hu chametz. He said they're all hygienically clean. Why can't you use hygienically clean utensils? Right. So I said, well, if you have one of these big soup pots and a little piece of bread falls in there, we have to dispose of the whole thing. So I said, I never heard of such a thing. So that's the chukah. You can have it hygienically clean, but it's not kasher.
Right. That's not right. Good. Okay, so that's important just to keep in the back of one's head. Yes, we fit into it. I mean, this is the only pasuk we have, and the Gemara then goes on to make sense out of it. But there's a conflict of, well, how much do we invoke the physical, and we'll see a dispute specifically about this. How much do we invoke the physical world and experimentation versus how much do we say, look, it's a hope, we don't really know the answers, we don't really understand, and therefore we have to be, in this case, we'll be strict on it. So that's, keep in mind as we go through some of these sugyas. So let's talk about cups. Cups, not talking about mugs, not talking about China mugs, talking about cups. Now, why am I not talking about mugs? What's significant about cups that aren't about mugs? Right? That is, you usually only use it for cold drinks. Right? Usually, our cups that we have, not mugs, but glass cups that we use. Maybe once in a while you need a little bit of, you put some tea in it, but usually if you do that, it will burn your hands. Right? So you not only don't do that, and even if one does do that, what are the chances that what you're putting in is A, hot, and B, chametz? Right? So not so likely. So what's the story with the cups that we use over the course of the year. Do I really have to kasher them? What's the story there? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us, has the following dispute. The dispute is, well, what happens if I usually use something one way, however, once in a while I use it another way? And I use it without that much heat. I usually use it cold. And once in a while I use it hot, or I usually use it as a, you know, borrowing from many of the other shirim we've given in terms of Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Kashrus. Normally I use it as a kli sheni, and every once in a while I use it as a kli rishon. I use it with a more intense amount of heat. So do I have to be concerned about the once in a while, or do I go with the majority? So that ends up being a dispute amongst the rishonim, and the Rav Yosef Karo paskins lekula, paskins leniently for the purposes of Sfardim. He says, kol kli, holchin bo achar rov tashmisho. With all vessels, we follow the majority of its usages. So hilchach, therefore, kara afabishal pamai mishtamshin behen bekli rishon alaiz, with a kara, with a plate, right? Even though once in a while it will be put as a kli rishon on a fire, most of the times you don't. Most of the times you just put things on a plate. You don't generally put your plate on the stove. You generally don't put, right? You now
talking about a metal
plate. Yeah. Okay, either, yeah. In this case, will be metal, right? We'll say metal for these purposes. So you don't usually cook on it. You usually, right? Now today, you actually sometimes or more often will cook on it. Why do we more often today cook on plates?
Microwaves,
right? Because you put your plates in the microwaves. If that's the case, probably gets judged as a kli rishon. That's the bad news. The good news is that generally when you put things in the things that you're putting in your microwave are not metal, right? These aren't things that you're going to really be kashering anyways, right? If it is metal, then we have to have a different kind of discussion after shir. So anyways, so that is the opinion of Yosef Karo. So we follow the Rav Tash, and certainly with him, if you ask him about cups, he'll say, okay, what's the big deal? Cups, you know, usually don't use it with heat at all. You usually use it a totally different way, so perhaps you don't have to worry about it at all. Comes the Rama and says, V'yesh machmirim, we are strict about it, lahagil hakaros b'kli rishon. We take all of our plates and we put it in the kli rishon, regardless of what the majority usage is. Why? And that is our custom. Why? This is a little bit of a question. It's based on a tshuva of the Rashba. And the Rashba says, because of the chumrah of Pesach. Right? Because of the stringency, we have a couple of extra stringencies on Pesach. A few, we're trying to be a tad little strict on Pesach than we are the rest of the year. So because of that tad little strictness, then we're going to say, you're going to have to kasher all of your things. Right? V'chein, v'chol davar sheyesh lachash, anything that I might have a concern, shem nishtamish bo b'kliri, that maybe I used it in kli rishon, kapos v'chadomo lezeh, right? Such as kapos would be
spoons,
okay? That maybe I used it in a kli rishon, probably not, but maybe I did, so I'm going to be machmir on all of them. V'yesh machmir lahagil kol kli shtia. There are those that are strict to do hagala, meaning to put into the boiling hot water all the cups. Even though you normally use it with cold water. Why? Or with cold things. Because every once in a while you use it with chamim. So, okay. So we're going to be strict, and because I use it every once in a while for a cup of tea, right? So I'm going to be strict. Now, okay, fine. So I could buy that. However, there's some things that I never use for tea. I keep my eye on it the whole year. For example, Kiddush cups. Right? My Kiddush cups. So what possibly, I don't think, maybe once in a while we've drunken tea out of a glass cup, right? But out of a Kiddush cup. Right, I don't think anybody has done that. Would really burn your hands. Right, that would not be good. So, do I have to kasher those? So the Aruch HaShulchan says yes. The minhag is to be machmir with all the kli shtia kishiruuyim lahagilan. That if they're fit to have hagala done, you should be magil them. Even though they're used by cold, he puts in the same thing. Once in a while, I use it with hot water. V'chein, shorin behem pesisei lechem. There might have been some bread that may have splattered into it from time to, from me'es le'es. V'kavush havakim mevushel. I mean, what are we concerned about? That maybe the cup was in your your sink. Right? You put it in your sink, and it might have been sitting there for a little while. There might have been some bread there. If it was soaking for 24 hours, it's absorbed that way. Right? Those kind, right? That kind of concern might exist.
Is that a bigger issue in terms of washing the this cup of tea or this cup of water along with everything else? That's
Yeah, isn't that the bigger issue? Well, yes and no. Meaning, if you would ask me, b'di'eved, do I have a problem? I would say no. Meaning, if you would call me and say, oh, gosh, what happened? However, yeah, it makes sense that that would be, we could find ways in your daya to say it's okay. But yeah, that all of a sudden you have a problem. If you have your cup sitting in your sink, or you have your cup being washed with your with other things, or you have your cup sitting there with a little bit of lechem, a little bit of challah schmutz stuck in it for 24 hours, right? So that's real. That's a real absorption. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan says to be nervous about. Yeah.
So even if you know that you don't do all those things with your kiddush cup, but still you act as if you do.
All of these things are because less this, less that. If you really keep your eye on it for the entire year, so then there's room to say no. But come on, who's gonna, you know, like, it's worth it. It's just a kiddush cup.
You can argue both ways here, that they want to set the minhag, everything has to be kosher, or the opposite. You could argue both ways.
So the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, this is Aruch HaShulchan because he says the minhag, so I knew the Rabbi Cohen would like the minhag is to do this. But I would add in that even when he says the minhag is, he adds in reasons for it. So I would you know, if you would come to me and say, look, we used it once for Michael's wedding, right? We took it out once the entire year. The rest of the time we use it for, you know, it was only used for Pesach. Do I have to kosher it? So I think there we could probably be make a lot, right? And then when we were sure that there wasn't going to be any bread served, then we're going to keep it private, you know, right? There you can make a case that no, but otherwise, if it's in the regular usage, the Aruch HaShulchan says one should do it. So that's why we kosher kiddush cups if you plan on using your kiddush cups over the course of Pesach. Yeah.
So you just serve. This is only if you plan to use it on Pesach.
Right, you don't have to kosher things you're not going to use. Right. Hagala is referring to hot water. Yeah, I did not cover, maybe that would be a different topic here. I'm trying to shy away from the, let's just cover all Hilchos Pesach every year. Right? I'm trying to pick a few things to focus on, and right? But we can talk about next year, just all Hagala, really what's going on there. But you could use even a chametz pot in theory for a gala, as long as it hasn't been used for 24 hours. That's something to keep in mind this year, because we'll be doing the Hagala on Sunday, so you should keep in, if you're going to do your Hagala on Sunday afternoon, right, kash your kiddush cups, you should make sure to clean it out after lunch Shabbos in order to get the 24 hours before you do Hagala next day.
What about preparing?
Important thing to keep in mind. What?
Preparing.
What are you preparing? I'm
not
drinking.
Supposed to prepare it for the next
day. I'm not preparing for the next day. I'm using it for lunch, and then I'm washing it, like, you know, because I don't like having dirty dishes around. Okay, so there is. I remember seeing this growing up. I think it's less prominent, just because I don't know if people ask me about it. But the kli zechuchas, the glasses over the course of Pesach. So what's the story with glasses in general? A glass is considered something that you need to kosher, that you can't kosher, or that you don't even need to kosher. I mean, all three of those possibilities exist in the Rishonim, right? A, that you never have to kosher it. B, that you can't possibly kosher it. And the C is the middle one, is it's like metal, that you know, it could become a problem, and then you go ahead and kosher it. So the Mechaber is totally here as well, is Mekil. Kli zechuchis, glass, in the source number 4. Glass vessels. Afilu machnisen lekiyum. Even if you use it regularly and use it with hot water, don't have to be machshir. I would point out this is in Hilchos Pesach. This isn't in Hilchos Hagolas Kalim. Most of the laws of kasher and kalim is found actually in Hilchos Pesach. This is in Hilchos Pesach. She'inam bolim, but they don't absorb anything. And all you gotta do is scrub them a little bit, and you'd be totally clean, right? So take your. I don't know if it's hard to do that anymore. It's hard to even do this? They use their glasses for the rest of the year? No. So he said, right? If it doesn't absorb, it doesn't absorb. So this is also the source people will use the same glasses or bowls for milchiks and fleishiks, right? Because it doesn't absorb. Just make sure it's clean. I believe that's falling out of practice, right? Some people still do it. They have their minhag to do that. So certainly. The Ramah is machmir. Now, this always gets tricky. I pointed out a minute ago that the laws of kashering kalim are found in the laws of Pesach. Now, we also mentioned earlier that we have a couple of extra stringencies over the course of Pesach. Right? So you always kind of, whenever you see a stringency in these laws, you always have to ask yourself, wait a second, is this a stringency for Pesach? Or is he being stringent throughout the entire year? Right, so he's not clear because if you ask for Moshe Esterlis, he'll say, "Well, I wrote a book for the laws of Pesach. I wasn't thinking about it the rest of the year at the time." Although, I'm not sure I want to say that, but you know, whatever. So here he says there are some that are strict, and we say the kli zechuchas afilu hagala lo mahani lu, and say that it doesn't work, meaning the opposite extreme. Right, that if glass absorbed chametz or if glass absorbed milk or meat, right? So it's absorbed, and now you also have another question. What does it mean that it can't kosher it? Right? What does it mean you can't kosher it? Either the stuff is coming out or it's not coming out, right? What does it mean that a clay vessel you can't kosher? Right? Either the taste comes out or it doesn't come out. But what's going on? So the way we understand is that we can never be sure that it's all coming out. Right, that it doesn't open the same way, and you can't be sure that it's all coming out. That's the rule when it comes to clay. So the Ramah is strict when it comes to glass and says that you can't kosher it. Now, again, question, does that apply the rest of the year as well? Question, we're talking about Hilchos Pesach here, right?
When we talk about kashrut and you talk about certain bugs that are too small to see. Nothing you can do about them. Yes, right.
So these are not bugs. This is Tom. This is taste.
What I was going to say is that if there are bugs that you can't see and therefore you're not chayav, I mean, there's no problem with
right.
Kashrut with them.
Right.
And then I take a glass and I wash it properly.
Right.
There's no tom, there's no visible sight of chalav, basar, chumash.
So we'll say. So first of all, you don't taste the bug in theory, which is the sif that we skipped last night. You also, even if we would taste the bug, we assume that bugs taste bad. So therefore, that
they're so small.
Right.
You can't see them.
Right. So it's the little ones you don't worry about, and even the bigger ones, we don't assume that it adds any taste. Here, so
we have what's called a microwave these days, and people will take a glass cup and warm something in the microwave. Wouldn't this be coming in then?
Right. So I mean, back to the previous thing with the once in a while. Right. If you would use it with heat, then I was pointing out that people don't. But if you say we do, so then yeah, it becomes.
You tried to pass your glass with
that. Let me just get to finish Mark's thing. So, but we do assume that the bleos, the things that are contained within the thing, do give off taste for the first 24 hours. And then after 24 hours, we're strict with what we call gezeira einu ben yomo atu ben yomo, right? Even though we'll admit, you're right, there's no taste coming out, still we're going to be strict with it. Furthermore, with Pesach, right, we assume that even mashu is a problem, even if it's not no same time, even if it's not giving a taste, it's going to be a problem. It's a question whether that would be only at Pesach itself, even before Pesach, whatever, but you need kosher l'Pesach kelim over the course of Pesach. I won't even give you that leniency. Forget about Deborah. Yes, Jonathan.
I was going to say the glass would shatter if you try to put it up to too much hot.
Okay.
That happened to my oven. I was koshering the oven on the clean seka while I was having boiling water, so it shattered last year.
Uh-huh.
So I couldn't have the oven over Passover. Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when we call makom, says the Mishnah Berurah, when we call makom, but makom she'ein benimtza kli zechuchis. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the following idea. If you're not able to get other glasses and you don't have other cups around and other vessels, the chayyadam writes the yachol lismoch lahakel and kosen yafa yafa lachshirai the irul gimel pamin. One has the right to clean them well and kasha them with irui three times, pouring hot water on them three times, and you leave them to soak for a while. A whole procedure. Has anybody seen this?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember seeing this with glasses. In order to kasher glasses, the Mishnah Berurah gives us permission. You leave it in water for 24 hours, and you change the water three times. So I remember seeing this. My mother grew up in a German household, so I remember not the bathtub being filled with not gefilte fish. I'm not that old, but with the glasses the week before Pesach, as my mother was pushing it back and forth.
So I did it once when I came to Israel in the last week to an apartment. Pure like sweat.
So the Mishnah Berurah, right? So the Mishnah Berurah is not thrilled with it. The Mishnah Berurah kind of says you shouldn't do it. But if you if you have that customer, B, there's no other glasses around, so then one would have the right to be lenient on it. Okay, that suffices with glass. But he's not filled, but he says, okay, I would add in with this kula, meaning that yes, if you're also pretty sure you didn't use it for hot water also, so then one has an additional level to be lenient on. I mean, you say,
I drink a glass of latte with a spoon in it.
Well, if you do, then you do. But
true. And that's a Russian thing.
All right, so that's the story with cups, glasses, etc. Okay, we mentioned before the topic of do we experiment? Do we look into whether it actually absorbs or not absorbs? Do we look at whether it comes out or not come out? Or on the other hand, do we look at the fact that the pasuk calls it a chok, calls a mitzvah? We're not necessarily going to go ahead and analyze. So the Gemara seems to say, gives an example of some type of analysis. So it says, Bo minei me'ar me'mar. They asked from a me'mar. Hani mani dekunya ma'li shtamish b'hu v'pesach. Glazed vessels, may we use them over the course of Pesach. So about glaze over clay. So the Gemara says, Yeroka lo tibayalach. The green ones, there's no problem. They're certainly usher. I mean, don't ask me about the green ones. Those are for sure a problem. The question is, what about the black ones and the white ones? Meaning a particular type of glaze that may block it from the clay that was on the inside. That's what the Gemara wants to know about. So again, if they have splits, there's no question. Right? Meaning if the glaze is broken, then that's for sure a problem. The question is, what about if it's smooth? So he said to him, we see that they exude, which shows that they absorb. I don't know how they saw this, but they heated it up. And they saw that it started sweating. Right? And he said, aha, you see, if there's stuff that's sweating out of it, what does that mean? That means that there is stuff in it. That means that there has been stuff that has been absorbed in it. So hence they are usser, and the Torah testifies concerning an earthen vessel that is for sure going to be a problem, never passes out from its side, that the absorbed matter never ultimately comes out. So the Torah itself says that you're not allowed to use charis, right? You're not allowed to use clay. This has a glaze over it. Does the glaze block it? Well, we see that there is stuff coming out, which means that there is stuff that is absorbed, therefore we're going to call it charis, we're going to call it clay, and rule that it's usser. So what do we see that they're abundant? Here, in this case, they came out asr. What do we see that they're doing? Right? It seems like they were experimenting. Right? It seems like they're looking at this and saying, is this going to be, is this a problem? Is this not a problem? Is this stuff that's absorbed or not absorbed? So the Minchas Yitzchak points to this, the Rav Dayan Weiss, who actually comes out lahakel in this situation. Surprise, surprise. Where he writes, Achnir came to lefi divrei habikiyim hani kelim shel plastika meshai tfei. After in lismuch lahatir mitam zebelo hagala, right? That we see that the Bikim say that they seem to absorb. So we can't say that we're going to be lahatir. See the darki chuvel inyan hashinim hazarim, other types of things. The ochlin behem machale basar v'chalav, that they eat from basar v'chalav. The tzidei letzarif mashal lefi amiras habakim, where how did they figure out how to do it? Well, they figured out how to do it based on what the experts were saying them. Nasmin kashav ishay shelo bali ayinjam. They declare that these things don't absorb. Right? They looked at it and said, this stuff doesn't absorb. Doesn't absorb anything, so therefore one has the right to be lenient on this. So therefore this, so what is he, so he says, what do we do when we have new materials that come out? Well, we take a look at them and try to figure out, what are they? Are we going to be strict on them? Are we going to be lenient on them? What is their level of absorption? So my parents were redoing their kitchen, so they wanted to, we'll get to the, actually, we won't cover the stringency of it. Do we use granite or do we use quartz? Right, that was the question, and quartz rock. I don't know.
Make comments up about quartz.
Apparently,
marble or
marble's different.
Marble or
what? Marble or quartz? Granite.
Granite
or quartz? I think it was quartz was the question.
Quartz.
Maybe it was marble. I don't know. I believe the rabbi said, well, he figured out, he looked at the thing and found some source, say, well, it doesn't absorb. That the experts say that it doesn't absorb. And that's why many are leaning, those that have the grand countertops, or the quartz, possibly quartz countertops, right, that they don't cover them over the course of Pesach. They'll maybe pour. Yes. So I remember I asked Rav Schechter about this at the time, and he thought that one did have to be strict. I think we've covered this in the past. I didn't put on the sources for why one has to be strict. It's based on the idea of davar gush, that say something once plunges itself on it, right, and you're going to have a problem of something else comes on it. I remember I got myself into a lot of trouble for it. So therefore, if you're not going to cover it, I don't think people here don't really have grand countertops.
Yes, you do.
Okay,
we do.
So those that have grand countertops, I remember my first year in Phoenix, I thought everybody should cover it. Everybody yelled at me, so I called. I called up Rav Schechter. I said, well, how about if we make the following deal? That they could leave their grand countertops uncovered on the condition that if anything solid falls on them, they have to throw it out. I mean, if anything hot falls on them, not cold, but hot, if you have a hot piece of schnitzel, a hot piece of potato kugel, a hot piece of meat, a hot piece of anything like that, and it falls on that countertop, so then one would be strict and would have to at least ask, figure out, probably be machmer over the course of Pesach.
Marble's different.
Marble would be the same. Well, all of these kinds of materials it would apply to. That if anything solid falls there that's hot, so one would have to dispose of that.
What about the rest of the year with meat and dairy?
So the rest of the year, we have more of a reason to be lenient. Yes.
So what is the difference between a piece of meat falling on a hot piece of meat falling on the granite countertop and taking the pot out of the stove and putting it straight on the?
Okay. So the meat and that stuff is somewhat liquidy. It somewhat has a little bit of fat. So therefore, there's a way to. You see, the grease is left there, right? So there's a transference. However, if you put the pot right on. We actually had granite countertops in Phoenix. It was like great. It takes a while to like get used to, like you can actually put this down, right? And also put it down light enough that it doesn't crack. A pot in theory doesn't have anything on the bottom. It's dry, so therefore nothing's going to go back and forth. This is also only a Pesach Chomer, not the rest of the year. Also, I wasn't going to cover that tonight.
The Storm Saying has people are doing in the kitchen. As in reference to the degree of absorption, say, different types of material.
Right, the Starkey gives their... Right, the Starkey Heidemann gets into that stuff, yes. I meant to cover Rav Moshe Feinstein, by the way, rejects this whole story. He says, at least with regards to Pesach, he was asked about rubber. Does rubber work for Haggalah? Can you kasher rubber? So Rav Moshe says, well, it depends what you mean by rubber. Where does rubber come from? Rubber comes from trees, right? So if rubber comes from trees, so... So it's the same as wood. Wood can be kashered. If you have a wooden spoon, wood is on the list of kasherable materials.
For Pesach?
For Pesach, yeah.
Really?
Wood can be kashered.
So your counter? Put your black counter?
Well, I mean, you have to kasher that like you would a counter. You know, you have to make sure it's clean and all that.
But wood is so absorptive. Wood is something.
Yeah, so we assume that you put it in, things come out. You know, the water. You assume that you could kasher it.
I had read something you had to like sandpaper.
You have to be clean. You have to make sure it's clean. It's kasherable. So he says, just as wood would be kasherable, rubber would be kasherable. So, however, then he turns around and says, however, you know, maybe that was the way things were in the 50s when I actually wrote this tshuva. But nowadays, he says himself, he says, nowadays I've heard that they have rubber called chemicals, right? That's artificial, right? It's not regular. It's not tree rubber. It comes from chemicals. So he says, the second line, have yesh rubber she'eno me'etz elami taruvus minim. It's some kind of a mixture, kimim, like chemicals. Shehu davar chadash, which is new. Shelo nimsa v'divri akadmonim ein lahatir lahagilim. Right? We don't have that. We wouldn't be able. I can't allow you to be to a gala. And here again, you have a little bit of a question. Is he talking about the whole year? Is he only talking about
but if they rely on professionals or scientific...
No, Sir Moshe seems to not.
I can see his position, because once you use science in the laboratory, I mean, and you accept it, a lot of things in halacha...
Okay. Right, so he says it's a chok. This is the whole tshuva. It's a two-sentence paragraph of a three-paragraph tshuva. It's the other two are talking about other things. Right, he doesn't really explain what he's thinking, but he was, you know, he was asked, what about rubber? Could we kasher rubber? And he said no. Right, he said no, because it's artificial and we don't know what it is. Okay, maybe we'll skip the two ovens. We can do ovens is do we have it on the shelf here? No. The ovens are as follows. The Shulchan Aruch has a line about kuvia. Kuvia is some kind of small type of oven. He tells you, Shul klisha osim melabnin va'afar va'open v'tagnin bo, that you use in order to heat things up, etc. V'chein tanur katan shekohen pidlia, some kind of small oven. He sikumi b'chutz aser lafutz bo b'pesach. That's heated up on the outside, right? So you're not allowed to cook there or bake there over the course of Pesach. The ein chametz shevo nifle pekach. Was the chametz, you're not going to be able to get the chametz out just by heating it up like you regularly do. The malu gechalim mibifnim shari. The only way to do it is if you fill it up with coals on the inside. So if everybody wants to go buy some coals,
charcoal.
Right, with charcoal, fill up your oven with the charcoal. Light it and
blow torch.
And good luck. Right. So the other. Right, so the next possibility is to use a blowtorch to go through it and to right. So I'm not sure. I once tried this. I didn't even understand what it. I remember it was much. Probably 10, 15 years ago. I tried this on my parents' oven. I don't think I knew what I was doing. It didn't seem to be doing much to me. Some do it. I'm not sure with much success. What?
Destroy the finish on the oven.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. The oven will never be the same if you do it correctly. So, what are the possibilities that are out there? So, one is you get a self-cleaning oven, which is a very nice thing to have, right? So, self-cleaning ovens. Get up to, I put here from Rabbi Gedalia Felder Sefer. That's Felder's nephew. His father?
Father.
From Toronto.
It's his father.
Right? So Felder, his father wrote, we have a couple of the volumes here on the shelf, where he wrote halacha books before they were like popular to write halacha books, with a lot of interesting leniencies in it before it became that English halacha books have to be all, you know. So anyway, so he includes this idea of a self-cleaning oven. He says it's a self-cleaning oven, so that qualifies as this blowtorch. That's the equivalent, burns everything out. You don't have to worry about
easy
it.
Easy off is a poison.
Yeah, but so, easy off so will still won't get.
Out.
But who says it gets inside?
What are you
as soon as it gets inside. Right. So there is.
Put it inside.
It is. So it is. Well, when it's self-cleaning, you don't need it. He's talking about by regular ovens. If you use it by regular ovens, so I don't think that solves all of your problems. So Rav Moshe was machmer on this. Rav Moshe said you either need to get an insert, or you either blowtorch, or you get some kind of insert in your ovens, which pretty much means you're not really going to eat fully cooked food over the course of Pesach. So in Rav Eider's book, so he quotes from Rav Aaron Cutler, which is, I think, what most people do today. Hayamora lahakshir tanurim didan, aydeshiasi kenu lekama shaos, vahayomer mitam kabolu kachpolto. He says that if you take a look at our ovens, they only get up to a certain amount of heat. So if you just turn it up in order to get up to that amount of heat, whatever got in at that high, at that amount of heat is going to come out at that amount of heat. So he recommends that he says you got to get up to the highest point. He says here that it should be an hour, a few hours, or an hour. I tell people, an hour you should usually get you up there. He writes about tam shekasavnu sha'a, right? The reason he wrote an hour, kilefiyachush near she'in chami musav nosefes achrasman af yoser katzer misha, right? After an hour, you're not going to get it any hotter than it's going to be than it was at that hour, and that's what you got to do. I saw also today that it's quoted from Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron said that idea that what about the ovens in Shulchan Aruch? And the Shulchan Aruch was also talking about ovens. Said you can't do that. Right? It seems like you can't do it. He says no. There's a big distinction. Those ovens, people used to like stick things on the walls. He used to cook it by describing the Gemara that he would slap things on the wall, and that's the way that they would use it in order to heat it. We don't use our ovens that way, at least not on a regular basis, right?
The leaf,
you take the dough and you would stuff it on the wall of the oven in order to cook that way. So they would actually be using the walls of the oven as part of the process of cooking. They would also make it small. It would be very tight fitting in there. In order to, that's how they would cook. I don't know.
Jerusalem, the leaf of bread is right there.
Maybe Rabbi Cohen could get us some manuscripts of cookbooks from the 1200s, and we'll be able to see exactly
like Shalaya, how they make the leaf bread.
Lafas. You say leafa?
Leafa. Oh, they slap it against the sides of the
oven.
What?
Malawa. Or in Tel Aviv, I saw it. There's pita that looks like this black Yemenite matzah or something.
So that's what we do. I think that's what most people do. They turn their oven on for an hour. Some recommend, it makes sense to put in like a tray of water in there, so that way you get a little bit of steam going on there also. And those for the nevuch, the unself cleaning oven people.
But I was taught that you still have to line the door.
So with the self-cleaning, I'm not sure he says it, as he said in here. Right, that's what, right, thank you. The self-cleaning thing, the problem is, what happens in the self-cleaning cycle, you resort to a self-cleaning oven for several years, right? It heats up the walls. However, it doesn't heat up the door. Why does it not heat up the door? Because if you would touch the door, you would get burnt, right? So we don't, that's not a good idea to make the door 900 degrees, even on the inside, not on the outside. So the door doesn't get self-cleaned. So even those that self-cleaning oven, in order to truth is, according to Rav Moshe, you should be okay anyways, because the oven's not getting to 900, it's hotter than it ever got before. Not according to Rav Moshe, excuse me, according to Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Aaron should be okay anyways, but you might as well, if you have a self-cleaning oven, you put some tin foil across the door, and you're Yotze according to everybody. All right, thank you.
That's interesting, because if you have stuff on, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not questioning that, but it's interesting because if you actually watch the cleaning process, if you have something on the door, it does take it off and you get that white powder on the door. So that's interesting.
Not on the self-clean ovens. I've never had even the internal
ones. I see it on mine.
It's supposed to be.
But if it's not self-clean?
It's not self-clean, so I would go with this more lenient thing of turn it on for an hour, put some hot water in it.
But still be easy off and all that.
You should clean off all the stains. If there's a stain there, get rid of that. Right. All right. The last topic to cover is the idea of crumbs. So this my brother-in-law, those Mayans that I put out in Shul. So those are actually written by my brother-in-law. He's been writing them for 30 years. He'll actually be joining us for the first days of Pesach. So I remember I was once he's a lawyer, but he is a big Talmud Chacham. His house is filled with Sfarim. I mean, like, besides learning the wall, he's also collecting. he's everything in his house. So one time I picked something up. I think I was reading. Oh no, I wasn't even there. It was at our niece's bat mitzvah. So I had picked up one of his farm. I was looking into it, and he yells at me, "Hey, get it away, chametz!" And I said, "What do you mean? It's November." So he said, no, Pesach, we're machmir, we don't want to let any of the books near the chametz the whole entire year. So there's one required to be machmir, to go through all of their svarim over the course that they've used over the previous year to get rid of all the crumbs that may have fallen into the things. So you think, yeah?
Yeah.
No way. Well,
30 years ago, I remember everybody in Pesach had their books out, and I said, "What's going on here?"
They said, "Pesach." So,
the
whole year. All right. So let's see. So let's see. Well, it's the Minhag HaGra also, yeah. So let's see. So the Hashulchanos v'hatevos. Lach shematznin v'hen ochlin kol hashana, the tables that you use chametz on the entire year. Ragim laros aleim rochim lefisha lepamim nishpach merek min hakedera l'sochan. So this is already
marak,
the soup, right? Even though you have your table that is completely clean, there's no crumbs around, right? So we say to cover them. Or we say to do iroy on them. We say to pour hot water on them. He doesn't say you need to cover them. He just says you need to pour hot water on them. Why? Because what's going to happen is the hot water will, the soup will spill on it. The soup had matzo balls in it, and that's going to be tough. It had non-kosher l'Pesach matzo balls in it, bread balls, and that's going to be a whole problem. So comes the Mishnah Berurah and explains, wow, that's... Anyways, the Mishnah Berurah says, V'yesha kas, v'yeshat tzarech laniach aleim od mapa. No, you have to put a tablecloth on it as well. Why? Shema nivdak bo adayin od chametz be'ein. That perhaps actually real chametz stuck to it, meaning meat or schnitzel or things like that. Shemasik dechein roi linog b'tevas ha'umagdil. That's what we should do with our tables and etc. Yiv shalat tapos, you can't really be matar them. Shalo yishar me'uma bein hadveikim. Val b'shulchanos pshutim ein lahachmir. If it's a totally smooth table, one doesn't have to be machmir. Okay, so our minhag is to cover up all the tables for those reasons. Comes the Mishnah Berurah and says, why? And you notice I switched to 20 simanim earlier. Why 20 simanim earlier? Because Esther talks about the laws of bedikas chametz. So the Mishnah Berurah is talking about the following question: why do we have to bedikas chametz? It's the first question that's asked in Maseches Pesachim, in the first Tosos of Maseches Pesachim. Why do bedikas chametz if you're doing bittel anyways, right? If you're getting rid of it, if you're saying none of it's mine anyway, so why do I have to do bedikas chametz? So we say, well, you do bedikas chametz lest you find a nice piece of thing and you're going to be tempted to eat it.
A gluska.
You're going to find a nice piece of food that you're going to eat, and you do bittel, even though you're doing bedikah, unless you miss it, you don't want to, maybe you didn't have full kavana to get rid of everything. So the Mishnah, right? You're going to forget, you might come to eat it. They tell us, even though one does bittel chametz, it's not enough, you have to do bedikas chametz. Even though you do bittel, you have to do bedikas chametz as well. So what about the crumbs, right? What's the concern, as Joel said? Shema yimatze galuska yafe. I'm going to find a nice piece of meat, a nice piece of chametz that I'm going to want to eat, right? So does that apply? What am I going to find in my svarim? So hopefully, even in my svarim, with the kids around, I'm not going to find a cookie, right? That's going to be difficult to imagine, right? The worst that's going to be is that there's going to be some crumbs found within the binding, right? So is that, what's the deal with that? So the Sefer Piskei Tshuvos is a commentary on the Mishnah Berurah, post-Mishnah Berurah. It's probably some fancy scholarly term for it, a super commentary, something. So v'lefizeh, he says, based on this, yish lahakbid livdok es hasfarim. One should check their svarim. Lest you use it while you were learning, while you were eating, and some chametz fell in, crumbs of chametz fell in. Right? He says, so it's a little difficult. Maybe the whole year you shouldn't use svarim at all. Plus, you know you're going to want to use them on Pesach. However, if you know that it's safe and you're not going to use on Pesach, I don't know, like, you know, Yisagrim ba'aron, right? So you put it away in your closet. Oyamid b'fnei mechitza v'yimkerim l'nachmi. So sell them all to the non-Jews. So you can tell Rick Churchill, not only am I selling everybody's chametz and everybody's pasta and everybody's crackers and the little things that are stuck in everybody's shelves and between the pots, but I'm also selling you a whole lot of Jewish books, right? So that's what the Pesach Tshuva suggests. So what is he basing himself on? So in the footnotes, he quotes from the Maaser Rav. The Rav is the Vilna Gaon, Lahagra, Os Kufayin Ches. Skip the parentheses of Orchos Rabbeinu Pesach Os Kafal Shachazonish. The Gaon of Yaakov Kanievsky, the Stipler, Nahagu Lahaskil Livdok Hasfarim. They would check all the Sfarim Shayu Mishdamshim Behem BePesach that they would use over the course of Pesach. Kama Yam Lifnei Pesach. I mean, they would already start going out to the Mirpeset, shaking them out and letting all of the crumbs fall to the ground, and they would check them all page by page. Woo! Whew, that's a lot of work. It's probably easier just not to. Anyways, the ikav kach lo hayu yichom laniach habdika zos lel yudal and machmas hazman rav. They wouldn't do it on the 14th. For in theory, you should have to check them all the night of the 14th. Now that would take too long. They would do a bedika earlier. V'shar sferim hayu mochum and everything else they would sell away. However, there are others that say that we don't have to. Habashal, right? The shelo reinu l'rabuseinu shenagu livdo kasarim kodem pesach. That we didn't see our Rebbeim check their Sfarim before Pesach. You don't have to worry about the crumbs. However, if you're going to do that, so maybe you don't want to open those Sfarim where you're eating over the course of Pesach. So I think that's so. Some have the minug the whole year. We're not going to eat anywhere near our Sfarim, lest things get stuck in them. Minug two is we're going to check them all before Pesach, and minug three is instead of not having your Sfarim near your table the whole year, not having your Sfarim near your table over the course of Pesach. Right, and that way, even the crumbs, you don't necessarily have to do bedika for crumbs. Right, the same thing applies to like the crumbs in your like the cracks in the floor of your kitchen, right? So to go through all of those things, that you're not going to find a galuska yafa there. You're not going to find a fancy piece of thing there. Also, if you're not going to be able to find it, so there is, I don't know, do we have any other Odyssey people? You have an Odyssey, right? In cars, I noticed last year in our we were checking for a thing. I saw a pretzel fall into underneath one of the seats, and I couldn't figure out any possible way of getting it out. I think there's just a black hole there that's like filling up with pretzels. And what? Yeah, I don't know what. But there was one spot there was no way of getting down there. So no way of getting down. There's no way of getting down there. One is not required to drive themselves crazy to get to some place where you're not going to be able to get to. Bitzel will suffice for that.
Gemara says lo yira'e lo yimatzeh.
Right.
If you see you're not supposed to see crumbs.
Right.
So if you open up your book and you see crumbs.
Yeah, but what we're saying, Bittel will take care of that. Meaning, I can't find my crumbs, so I did Bittel. I said any crumbs that I find over the course of Pesach is Bittel, right? Is not mine. And then I say, but maybe I'm going to want to eat it. Please, I'm not going to. That gazer is I'm going to find a cracker, and that I'm going to want to eat. I'm going to want to eat the little crumb that's been sitting in my my Gemara since 7.5 years ago, and I learned that the last time that, you know.
No, but
this is by taking care of that by Bittel. I mean, the Torah is taken care of by the fact that I've been with Vatel everything, that I've nullified everything. Okay?
So you had to check the books or not?
So Rabbi Cohen is mocking around the books, I'm making on the books. I'm lenient on the books.
Can you just check the books that you're going to use and put the others?
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He said you can check the put else away. Yeah, me, I'm neurotic about my farm. To tell me, pick the 10 you're going to use over the course of test, I can't handle that. That's like, doesn't work for me. All right. Yes.